from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last night when President Donald Trump fired his acting attorney general. The president said that the nation's top law enforcement officer had committed an act of betrayal by refusing to defend his executive order shutting down travel for refugees and people from seven predominantly Muslim countries. Her name is Sally Yates, and she had served as deputy attorney general under President Barack Obama. Now, instead, the president replaced Yates with Dana Buenti, the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, and he wants Congress to move quickly to confirm Senator Jeff Sessions for the permanent role. Meanwhile, protests continue in various places around the country, on city streets and at airports, where dramatic scenes have played out involving people in limbo. This hour, we're going to try to answer questions you might have and discuss what comes next. One of the big themes since the inauguration of President Donald Trump has been engagement, but also the question of continued engagement and what that might look like going forward. So let's talk about that. Let me welcome my guests for the hour. Iman Abbott is an organizer for the New York CLU, the Civil Liberties Union. Iman, nice to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Mustafa Al-Mansouri was a translator for the U.S. Army who was originally from Iraq. Mustafa, welcome to you.
Thank you, Evan.
Alma Amarhadzic is a treasurer and board member for the Islamic Center of Rochester and a former Bosnian refugee. Alma, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And Mike Boucher is co-director of counseling and community work at St. Joseph's Neighborhood Center. Not only here talking about the work he does, but also his feelings for the community. Mike, you were at the Rochester event on Sunday, is that right?
I was, yes.
How many were there?
Gosh, I'm not. Others may have to help me with the estimates, because I would put probably close to 1,000, but there may be more than that. I don't know.
Iman,
on Sundays?
Is that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
About 600, I think, 600, is what they estimated.
Okay. And, you know, you're someone, Iman, who has been hoping that the community would get engaged and stay engaged, you know, not just be there for one demonstration, but also show up continually going forward. How do you feel about this issue right now? Are people engaged in the way that you're hoping?
I think that people have overwhelmed me by the amount of support. And I know Alma and I were talking before the radio show began, but we have never felt more connected to this community than ever before. And I think it's great to see so many people coming out to so many rallies. But yes, it's not just a one-and-done thing where you show up to a rally and you just call it a day. There's so many different community organizations, one of them being the one I represent, the New York Civil Liberties Union, that are trying to help these communities of people, you know, in their protections and whatnot, and just hope to see people getting involved.
Alma, how do you feel about what you've seen?
I am actually too overwhelmed with the support that we have seen. As a board member of the Islamic Center of Rochester, I have never seen this many people coming through our door and showing the love and support. And I have been working with the local Syrian refugees actually for the past 6 or 7 months, and the support for them has been amazing locally.
Okay. Mustafa, what do you think about what you've seen?
Well, I feel very connected to that community. My kids keep asking me, are we going to leave the United States of America? And they said, this is our land. We came to this country to look for land of freedom. And we are strongly believe this is our land.
When did you come here?
I came 1994 to this country.
1994. And tell me a little bit about the service and the work that you did as a translator. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And so what did that involve for you?
Well, I came to U.S. as any dreamer has come to the free land of freedom. We worked very hard to reach his middle-class family. I did translations. I show my loyalty to the country, and I will not put this country down because I believe strongly this is my country, and I made the decision to have my family is land of freedom to them.
Are you scared right now?
I'll be honest with you, I don't really scare as much as I worry about my kids. My kids, they told me, you don't have to be as a good person to be president of the United States. And I was shocked, you know, of this.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Your kids said you don't have to be a good person to be president of the United States?
Yes.
They said that in reaction to the recent election?
Yes. They said, I said, why you say that? I said, you know, it's 11 years old boy. He said, because Donald Trump done everything is wrong. And he became his president of the United States. He used the violence. We fought for the United States of America. As Mr. Khan says, we vote for United States of America. What are you done to our country, Mr. Donald Trump? And we done everything is right. And Donald Trump used the broken system to succeed, you know, to lead the country without of knowledge.
So do you worry about what will happen then to your children? What do you think will happen?
My children is disappointed when they came from school and the other kids is sharing the information with them. And they said, you know, we don't know what they think about us now. My wife, she's Muslim, and she's labeled Muslim because she wearing hijab. She said, I don't know how I can walk in the public and what is public think about me right now.
Has anyone ever said anything to her or reacted to her because she wears a hijab?
Actually, we have very good friend. They stand beside us and they encourage us. And I would like to thank my friend Jeff Debs, 64 years old, non-Muslim friend, non-Muslim American friend. He helped us, encouraged us, and he stand with us with every protest. And he is a believer in human rights.
Okay. And your children, how do their classmates react to having Iraqi classmates? Do they talk about your background? I mean, are our children pretty welcoming?
Well, we explain to them this is only temporary situations. And we, most of our friends, American friends and American knowledge, they understand this is not right and we're going to fight it and we not going to run away again. This is the freedom, a land of freedom, and we are fighting to be as a good citizens and stay home.
You're hearing from Mustafa Al-Mansouri, who's was a translator for the U.S. Army, originally from Iraq, talking about what the recent days mean to him, his family, his children. Iman, are you hearing similar concern? Similar, as Mustafa says, he doesn't feel fear for himself, but he thinks about his children. He thinks about the impact that this could have. What are you hearing?
I mean, we know that immigration law and immigration reform to begin with is very complex and they're very difficult to understand. And so with all these different executive orders that have been signed, a lot of people are just confused as to what this means immediately for them. And I know there's so many immigration attorneys themselves that are trying to define what the executive orders mean, what some of the court cases that are being brought in front of, whether it's the White House administration or even, you know, we know of the case that happened out in Brooklyn over the weekend. And just trying to identify what this means for those individuals who may not have been harmed yet or impacted by what this is or the people who have been detained and whatnot at the airports.
Okay. Well, Mike, as someone who wants to make sure that you are a visible ally for people in this community, what do you think being an ally means right now?
Well, I've been thinking about that a lot, actually. Like, what's the responsibility of people who may not be who may not see themselves as directly impacted by some of the decisions that are coming down? And I do think back to the phrase that affects one directly affects all indirectly. And then I think if we were to just start to trace, like in my everyday life, where are immigrants and refugees present? What have they contributed to my life? What's the infrastructure that many people who've come here provide? I'd probably start to be amazed at just how many people are in my circles that I already know that I may not know have this background. Let alone for me, just the welcome of this country, what we stand for. That's what I feel is really at stake in some ways, is both our international and domestic reputation as a place of welcome, and that deeply concerns me. I understand that there are a lot of issues I may not know fully, but I do know, especially from the people who I'm close to, who are refugees or immigrants, that there is a deep amount of fear, partly because of the confusion that has been created. I don't know if it's intentional or unintentional, but it really plays into this idea of not knowing who is safe, who is an ally, where can I go, what will happen to me, what's going to happen to my family, and it raises really deep questions. So for me, being an ally really means being out, being public, and trying to say that I'm not safe, but I'm safer. I'm not sure there's safety for a lot of people in a lot of ways, but I think there are ways we can make it safer for people to. And being a clinician in the mental health field, we know what fear response does to people. In terms of mental health, but also stress levels. And when those are continued over a course of time, let alone the everyday confusion that it causes people. So I think it's really important for people to feel a sense of safety in a lot of ways. And something like the rally, I think, does that at one level. It's a very public presence that at least lets other people know who may be more directly affected by issues that there are many in this community who are concerned and who want to stand, not just, as Iman said, on that day, but on an ongoing basis.
Well, when it comes to the kind of challenges that we may see for this, we open the hour by reminding you that Sally Yates is out of a job as the acting attorney general, a holdover from the Obama administration, and she had said that she does not think that there should be a legal defense to challenges against this order. And so I think Iman Abbott is probably in a good position working for the NYCLU to let us know what you think the kinds of actual challenges may be. I mean, it's one thing to organize demonstration, protest, to be an ally, to help people in various communities. It's another to see actual challenges. I mean, do you expect that we will see more from the ACLU, from the NYCLU, from other organizations?
I mean, we know that once Donald Trump was elected, that the ACLU was the first civil rights organization to come out and say, we will sue you, Donald Trump, if you pursue anything that is unconstitutional. And I think just focusing right now on this immigration ban, this Muslim ban, whatever you want to call it, we've had a number of civil rights organizations like the ACLU and the NYCLU come out and say this is a violation of both the First Amendment and the 14th Amendment. And so I think right now, again, we're just trying to identify what that means specifically and what that looks like in court. And so I don't want to speak to, because I'm not an attorney, I don't want to speak to what's going to come ahead, but perhaps we should expect it and lead forward as a community to be prepared for what may come ahead.
A teacher in California wrote yesterday that she said, it's never been cooler to go to school to become a lawyer for the ACLU than it is right now. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I'm joining the NYCLU, I've really wanted to become an attorney more than ever before. I think I do want to say that we've had attorneys on hand at JFK Airport all weekend that have been fighting really hard, and kudos to them, not just from the NYCLU or the ACLU, but even, you know, the NYIC, New York Immigration Coalition, and so many other immigration firms and organizations that are out there fighting really hard to try to get help for those detained right now at the airports.
What I want to do is appeal to listeners to share your stories, your concerns, any questions you have on any side. I mean, I want to make sure we understand here. Tomorrow on the program, we have a photojournalist and reporter, Chris Arnotti, who has traveled the country trying to tell the stories of what he thinks are kind of forgotten voices in impoverished communities. And Chris often reminds people through his work on Twitter that one of the big divides he encountered, especially in the Rust Belt, rural communities, communities that went largely for Donald Trump, was a gap on immigration, and that there are probably tens of millions of Trump voters who are cheering this. I understand that. Let's talk about it. You can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I'd like to read a little bit of dissent, and we'll start with Alma's response to it. So let me go ahead and read something first. It comes from David French, who writes for National Review Online. He's a conservative writer, and depending on how closely you follow the presidential contest, you might have been aware that there were some movements to draft a non-Trump Republican. Evan McMullen ended up being that conservative, but David French almost ran for president. But he writes for National Review Online, and he wrote a piece called Trump's Executive Order on Refugees, Separating Fact from Hysteria. He writes the following, quote, so what did Trump do? Did he implement his promised Muslim ban? No, far from it. He backed down dramatically from his campaign promises and instead signed an executive order dominated mainly by moderate refugee restrictions and temporary provisions aimed directly at limiting immigration from jihadist conflict zones. The order imposes a temporary 90-day ban on people entering the U.S. from Iraq, Syria, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen. These are countries either torn apart by jihadist violence or under the control of hostile jihadist governments. However, there are reports that the ban is being applied even to green card holders. This is madness. The plain language of the order doesn't apply to legal permanent residents of the U.S., and green card holders have been through round after round of vetting and security checks. The administration should intervene immediately to stop misapplication. If, however, the Trump administration continues to apply the order to legal permanent residents, it should indeed be condemned. So his biggest complaint there is for green card holders, but otherwise he says, look, these are places that are dangerous and that we should know that. Alma, how do you feel about that?
Well, as a former refugee, I went through a very strict and extremely difficult process of coming to this country. It's a very long process where you're actually interrogated by the people who are specially trained to interrogate you to make sure that you're telling the truth. If you look at some of the statistics of the Department of State, you'll find that people who are coming here are mostly people who are victims of torture, who are, you know, mothers with, you know, heads of households. They are people with severe health issues. And actually, that's exactly what I'm seeing in the local Syrian community, that we received about 19 families this year. Every single one of them has severe health issues, many of them with, you know, really mental disabilities and physical disability children. These are not people who are here to harm us. These are people who are here to provide better life for their families and their children. We are targeting the weak people who have not done anything to us. This is the most blatant example of religious discrimination that I have seen since I came in this country for 20 years ago.
If I could add to what Alma just said, objectively here, let's talk about whether this is a Muslim ban or not. David French writes, did he implement his promised Muslim ban? No, far from it. He backed down dramatically. That's not true if you listen to one of the people who helped put it together. And that's Rudy Giuliani, who was on Fox News, and he got asked directly, is this a religious ban? In explaining that it's not, he reveals that the whole intention was for a religious ban. They just needed a legal justification for it. Let's listen to what Giuliani said on Fox.
Does the ban have anything to do with religion? How did the president decide the seven countries? I understand the permanent ban on the refugees.
Okay.
Talk to me.
Tell you the whole history of it. So right. When he first announced it, he said Muslim ban. He called me up. He said, put a commission together. Show me the right way to do it legally. I put a commission together with Judge Mukasey, with Congressman McCall, Pete King, whole group of other very expert lawyers on this. And what we did was we focused on, instead of religion, danger. The areas of the world that create danger for us, which is a factual basis, not a religious basis. Perfectly legal, perfectly sensible. And that's what the ban is based on. It's not based on religion. It's based on places where there are substantial evidence that people are sending terrorists into our country.
Giuliani is saying there that the order from the president was Muslim ban. Find a legal way to do it. Alma, what do you think?
So the first thing that I'm going to say is that 0.5% of Syrians who are coming to this country are single male. Okay. That's If he received the 13,000 people last year, that's 65 people. And most of these people are actually people who are who have gone probably through torture from the horrible regime and that they're escaping from. And these people are escaping from the same people that we are afraid of, from ISIS. How can we actually say that these people are here to harm us? We are really going after innocent people who have not done any harm to us, who have... I'm really inviting everyone to go visit your local refugees, meet them, and see for you know, just yourself. You don't have to listen to anyone. Just go there, meet these people, and see why they're here. There's no base for this.
Iman, does that sound like a Muslim ban to you when Mr. Giuliani explains how it came together?
In one word, yes, it does. Yeah.
Mike, what do you think?
It does, and I was just listening to NPR this morning that kind of furthered this conversation on the immigration ban, and it does seem purposeful. Many of the countries, too, I'm not a political scientist, and there's a lot I don't know, but the United States government has had a hand in creating the destabilization in so many places. And, you know, it was said at the rally the other day, which is something I think we forget oftentimes, that anyone who comes as a refugee, this is not a choice. You don't become a refugee because you woke up one day and said, I wish to leave everything I know behind. People are forced into very, very difficult conditions. And I see it as a responsibility of the United States as a country, especially in places where we have historically had a role in creating the situations that are today. Many of these are 10, 20, 30 years old. But yes, it does seem very purposeful, and some of the rhetoric of those who are around and advising Donald Trump have really linked Islam and Muslims with terrorism. They don't seem to separate or even want to distinguish between the two.
Let me get Miles in Rochester who wants to weigh in on whether it's a Muslim ban or not. Go ahead, Miles.
Hi. I want to say that I absolutely believe that this is an attack on Muslims and on Islam in general. I believe that Mr. Trump is at his core dishonest, to put it nicely. And I think that the arguments that he and his team put forth, that this is not a Muslim ban, are simply nonsense. If you remember back to some of the debates when Hillary Clinton was talking to him about why and how he had not paid taxes for so many years, you know, his response was not to say that he did pay taxes or to say that he was right or wrong or whatever. It was simply, that makes me smart. And it was, if you don't like it, change the laws so that I can't get away with it. I can't do it. So he said very clearly in that instance that as long as the laws were such that it would allow him to get away with doing something, he had no compunctions with doing it. It wasn't a matter of right or wrong. It was simply that this is what the law allowed him to do, and he was smart enough to take advantage of it. Now, I don't think that he is within the bounds of the law or the Constitution in enacting this ban, but I think that there's enough obfuscation built into his system of government, that the oligarchy that he's establishing, that that there's question, and in the minds of his supporters, he is absolutely right in enacting this, regardless of its constitutionality or its keeping with the spirit of what this country was founded upon.
Well, Miles, thanks for the phone call. On the question of the constitutionality, as we said, you saw last night, Donald Trump dismissed the acting attorney general, and he will make sure that he is surrounded by people who do view this as constitutional. So I don't know. I mean, Iman Abbott is right in that the ACLU out of the gate said, we're here to challenge you legally when we think that you have overstepped the bounds of the Constitution. It's going to be interesting to see what courts say about that going forward. But Miles, thank you for the phone call. Bob in Mendon also wants to add on that. Go ahead, Bob.
I think it could be even more specific than just a Muslim ban. It's obviously a Muslim ban, and Giuliani went out and said it was. But more specifically, it's a Muslim ban for countries who don't do business with Donald Trump or where Donald Trump does not have business. And it can also be even more specific than that. I don't believe there's any attacks from people from those countries where the countries where he does do business that there are no bans, there are countless attacks. So that for me is even more disturbing, that he just selects according to what, I mean, I'm not surprised, but disturbed by that his decision is based on his own personal gain, not under the auspices, and under the auspices of protecting us, which I think is ridiculous. But when you really look at what he's doing, this is just what benefits him.
Well, Bob, I'm open to the idea that there is a financial incentive, but do you have evidence of that? I mean, I haven't studied country by country.
Yes, just based on what I've been reading the last couple of days, and I have a watch that gives me my CNN and other text news notifications whenever and it only gives the first couple words, and it's usually President Trump, and every time I see it, my heart sinks. Mm. But reading about I think it was 11 of the 19 9/11 attackers are from Saudi Arabia. Some are from Egypt. Those countries, there are no bans there. And if you look at places where he has property and property dealings, they are those countries. He has no business dealings in the seven countries that he listed.
Bob, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate that. Panelists, if anybody wants to jump in, do you agree with Bob? I actually hadn't looked into any kind of the money connection. I don't know. So, again, I always like to admit what I know and don't know. I don't know. What do you guys think? Anything?
Well, I'm going to say this. They picked the group of people that is the least likely to defend themselves. And I sometimes feel this is like a smokescreen for bigger things that are happening behind the scene that we are now maybe not paying so much attention to, because we are paying attention to this one issue. And he knew who is the weakest link and who to attack, who the Americans would, he thought, would be least likely to stand by. And I'm seeing that he's wrong, actually.
Well, it's interesting. Judith writes to the program and says, in the subject of chaos, she writes that the president is impulsive and seems to like chaos. The press and lawyers need to look beyond the chaos and learn what is happening in secret while attention is concentrated on whatever is to happen in the future. So in other words, Judith is saying we have to be very good at trying to see multiple layers here. Do you agree with that, Alma?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we have seen that this weekend he put Stephen
Bannon,
thank you, into a position that he should not be holding. And he removed experts from that team that should be on that team.
Well, the president will tell you that he should be holding that. He trusts Mr. Bannon.
I would respectfully disagree.
Or disrespectfully disagree, as the case may be at times. We're due for our only break of the hour, and I want to continue to take your phone calls on this subject. You're just hearing there from Alma Omer Hadzik, who is the treasurer and board member for the Islamic Center of Rochester and a former Bosnian refugee. Iman Abid is here, organizer for the NYCLU. Mike Boucher is co-director of counseling and community work at St. Joseph's Neighborhood Center. And Mustafa Al-Mansouri, translator for the U.S. Army, who is from Iraq. They're all here, and we're talking about questions and concerns going forward in regards to the travel bans, the immigration bans, the executive order, and what comes next. So let's get our only break of the hour and come right back to your phone calls. Coming up in our second hour, he's won 4 Pulitzer Prizes for his photojournalism work on everything from Hurricane Katrina to the Summer Olympics in Barcelona. He's covered presidents, White Houses, politics, international affairs. But William Snyder's alter ego is as the photographer for the rock band The Who. How did he get that gig? And how about a new exhibit coming to RIT? We'll talk to him next hour.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Wealth Strategies Group at Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, offering financial planning strategies that are tailored to clients' needs. Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, investing in you.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. On the line with us is Ellen Smith of the Rochester chapter of No One Left Behind. Ellen, how are you?
Hi, Evan. I'm fine, overworked, and very burdened and sad by this decision. I would like to give everyone an update. Our organization helps those with special immigrant visas. They served the military in Afghanistan and Iraq as interpreters and support personnel. As of this morning, we have had documented 46 Iraqis who are not permitted to enter the U.S. after they received their visas to get here. 15 of our families were turned away or forcibly removed from planes on Friday and Saturday. Turkish police forcibly removed SIVs in Istanbul after they had already boarded the plane for the U.S. One of our SIVs from Afghanistan, who arrived on Sunday, said Iraqis were not permitted to board the flight to JFK when he was in New Delhi. We had a single flight in Doha that left 8 SIVs stranded after they could not board. So the responses we've had to our website is that Turkish police forcibly removed Iraqi SIVs. Qatar Airlines would not allow the Iraqis to board on the planes. IOM pulled the tickets, and that's the International Office of Migration, pulled tickets after President Trump's order. And right now we have 2 SIVs stuck in Jordan, and we have 1 stuck in Iraq because of the ban. The fellow in Iraq actually is a green card holder, and despite what is being said that green card holders are allowed to come back, they are not letting him board a plane
in Iraq at this time.
Can I, Ellen, if you don't mind, can I read the note that you sent that came from one of the SIVs?
Yes.
This is what you
said. And that is the family who Turkish police forcibly removed in Istanbul. So please read that.
So this comes from, again, this is an SIV, Ellen?
It is a special immigrant visa given to those who served the U.S. military in Afghanistan and Iraq.
So here's what the note says. Quote, "We returned to Baghdad and we haven't unpacked our bags until now. We are still in shock. We have been dreaming about this for the past 7 years. I sold my car, my furniture, and I left my job since I had a visa in my hand. It brings tears to my eyes every time I remember what happened to us. I promised my daughter to take her to Disneyland, and I cannot fulfill my promise. She asked me, why do the Americans not want us? I don't know what to say. I still believe in America. I still believe in American people and will keep loving you guys no matter what happens because I ride in the Humvee side by side with brave American soldiers." End quote. That's, I don't even know what to say to that, Ellen. I mean, that's,
Well, I have to tell you, the amazing thing throughout this whole, you know, since Friday, is that Iraqis keep thanking me and thanking others and thanking American protesters for showing support. So, and instead of anger, they're actually, you know, I think that they understand. They don't understand, but they understand the situation. I just don't understand. I mean, I can't understand this, and I certainly can't understand it from our position that the special immigrant visas, these men who fought side by side with our soldiers, or they acted as interpreters, they acted as support personnel for our military, they have been thoroughly vetted. They have worked for years for our military, and they're only allowed to come here after there's a known threat on their life. They've been injured. You know, we had one guy who had a suicide bomber blow himself up at his house. To not let them in and to say that they are somehow a risk, it's crazy. The other point I would like to make is I have friends that work in the State Department, and they will be the first ones to tell you nobody wants it on their record that they allowed a terrorist in the United States. I mean, what Donald Trump is saying is that he does not trust our State Department employees in vetting these refugees, yet we have not had any refugees, you know, have an act of terrorism on our soil. I just think that this is a policy that wasn't thought out, and, you know, he's playing to his supporters, and he's not taking advice of, you know, government employees who've been there, done that. They understand the history, they understand the risks, and they do know what's going on.
Ellen, before I let you go then, you know, we've been asking everyone at this table from their various perspectives what you expect and what you want to see going forward in regards to this issue from the American public at large. What do you want to see happen?
Well, what we have been saying since we got word of this at 4 o'clock on Friday was that SIVs should absolutely be exempt. That, again, they are thoroughly vetted. They've worked for our military. They've worked for our military contractors. They've been support personnel. They have been side by side. They are not a threat. You know, and in terms of everything else, we hear from the families what everyone goes through, you know, to be a refugee, to come to this country. And the other thing is, the 9/11 hijackers, they weren't refugees. I believe they were in here on guest, you know, the six-month visas or student visas. So if you want to, like, relook at those policies, go right ahead. But what we have in place right now for our refugees works.
Ellen, thank you. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
That's Ellen Smith from the Rochester chapter of No One Left Behind. And Megan Mack, producer, finds that the New York Times agrees with Bob and Menden regarding the possible financial interests in play here. The New York Times writes the following, quote, "President Trump omitted from his ban a number of other predominantly Muslim nations where his company has done business. This adds further illegitimacy to one of the most arbitrary executive actions in our recent history and raises significant constitutional questions." And they go on at length as to some of those possible connections. So that's just a little bit more that Bob adds there, from Bob and Menden. So before I go back to your phone calls, let me just ask Mustafa Al-Mansouri what you make of hearing a family in Baghdad who feels like they had the visa in their hand, they had this moment to dream. A dad wants to take his daughter to Disneyland, and he feels like all of a sudden, what do you tell a child about what this country actually believes about them? Do you think that can we get past that as a country? I mean, or do you fear that, Mustafa, that this will have a lasting impact on perceptions?
I mean, first of all, I would like to tell you is that everyone came looking for the freedom of land. There is one way in his mind to be succeed. And we know every citizen here to succeed their path, make the United States greater. Those people, they are left without hope. They sell everything to come, you know, to looking for hope. And every Iraqi citizen looking for the right country is United States of America. They respect the Constitution. They respect the law. And they feel is more safer than anywhere in the countries to join that nations. What I feel, it's breaking heart in the front of my child. I need someone to help me to figure it out.
Well, let me get back to your phone calls. I know that a lot of people want to weigh in on what they're hearing. Sam in Webster next. Go ahead, Sam. Go ahead, Sam.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My comment is that I'm a Muslim myself, and I think this whole thing is being massively blown out of proportion. I don't support Trump per se. I mean, but I think that calling this a Muslim ban is kind of like misleading in two ways. Firstly, I mean, as you know, he's allowed Muslims from many other different countries to come in. And then other thing, as like people from Saudi Arabia can come in, Pakistan can come in. And then secondly, it's just a 4-month temporary moratorium until he kind of figures out what's going on. I think it's more appropriate to kind of like everybody to calm down, you know, let things roll out, let him figure out how to do things. And in my mind, it's justified because, I mean, countries where he's banned people from coming, they are, these countries they don't have, you know, strong government, so it's very difficult to vet people. And it's where, for example, if you ask me, I'm not going to trust any document from Yemen, because it's very easy to forge. So he's just given some time to kind of, you know, figure things out. I'm sure it's, you know, he's going to let people like the Iraqi family they were talking about who helped American soldiers. I'm sure, they're going to be given special consideration. And I don't think he's going to keep those families out for long, maybe for a little bit of time until he figures out. But I think, like, this is not doing service to anybody. It's just, you know, making people more partisan.
Okay, Sam, can you hold on for one second there? Because I hope you can stay on the line. You've given our panel a lot to respond to, so stay there, and I'll kind of go around the table. Iman Abid from the NYCLU, what do you think of what Sam is saying?
I think we have to understand that when that executive order was signed, that wasn't the only executive order that was signed. So this isn't necessarily just a small baby step. This isn't something that is small. We know that if we want to think back to the Japanese internment camps, it started off small with what you want to call a registry. And yes, the constitutionality of it has been argued to this very day. But what do we do? Do we wait until that completely unfolds itself? Or, you know, what do we do? Do we sit back? At the same time this executive order was signed, we were told that our president had just given the okay to build the wall around the Mexican wall. And then at the same time, we're hearing that there's an executive order coming out which is actually going to restrict LGBTQ communities at the very end of the week. Or even, you know, the Supreme Court nomination that's going to come up. These are just small. I think they're not small things. I don't want to use the word small because I really think small is the last word to think about. But it's not even just an issue on the entering of refugees or immigrants into the United States. I mean, we heard in the very at the very time when Donald Trump came out and spoke about what was going to happen with this, whatever you want to call it, the Muslim ban, or if that's not what you want to call it. But it doesn't just talk about the entering of people into the states. I mean, he talked about revamping the Secure Communities Act, and the surveillance is going to ramp up in our communities. So this is important to us to be focused on it and to see what we can do to protect our local communities of people. I mean, we've heard the term sanctuary cities being thrown around here and there, and maybe it's time that we do that in Rochester. Maybe it's time that we actually work to protect everybody who's here. I think by focusing in on it, you're not making it bigger than it actually is. You're actually just getting you're getting prepared for anything else that might come up. And if we know these protections are written into policy, or if we know that our communities are educated enough on what's going on, and we at the NYCLU, I mean, we'll do New Year Rights trainings if that's something that any community wants, and we'll step in and educate you on what your constitutional rights are. We have a president right now who is going way beyond the Constitution. And we see that his constitutionality of both his executive orders and even just some of his statements, and just yesterday with Sally Yates and completely disposing of her, shows to you that this man is not looking within the constitutional realm. He's looking far beyond something, and we don't understand it just yet.
Iman, but what about Sam's point saying she wouldn't trust any documents from Yemen, for example, that she thinks there are reasons to have concerns about certain nations and providence?
I don't want to make a generalization about everyone from Yemen, and I can't do that. I mean, we're hearing that there's an indefinite ban on all Syrian refugees. And yet the United Nations just came out saying that it's the worst humanitarian crisis is happening out in Syria. And at the same time, instead of our own president condemning those very acts, we're coming out and we're hearing from Justin Trudeau from Canada saying, you know, well, you're not welcome to the United States, basically, but you're welcome to Canada. Mm. And I just recently read a statement that with what's going on in Canada, there have been more than 39,000 Syrian families that have been able to enter Canada from the moment that Justin Trudeau became the prime minister. Mm. I wish that we could say that for the United States, and we could say that we are this welcoming country. We can still be. You know, it's not like this is over. If anything, I think we're trying to connect ourselves with one another more than we've ever have before.
Okay, hold on, Sam. Stay there. Alma, you want to weigh in too? Go ahead.
So, honestly, this is not who we are as a country. This cannot be who we are as a country. This is a country who is known around the world as a country of compassion. To actually ban Syrians indefinitely, the refugees who are suffering so much, is inhuman. And, you know, all due respect to Sam, I'm going to say the people who are vetting the refugees, whether they come from Yemen or Syria or Sudan or Somalia or Iran, Iraq, or Libya, those are the seven countries, please remember them, they're vetted by experts. People who are experts in their field. These are not just, you know, everyday people from the street. These are people who are trained to interrogate these people. These are people who are trained to check the paperwork that is, you know, that is submitted to them. So this is a very long process. This is not you go there one day and you get the visa next day.
Okay. Mike Boucher?
I would agree. I think the Canadian model is a good one. But even the prior caller said, I mean, we have so many things in place currently that would be available to vet our refugees. And I mean, it's hard for me to believe that Canada is somehow making itself incredibly vulnerable to all kinds of things. I mean, I think we have the personnel, we have the ways we can figure some of these things out. I guess one of my concerns about the Trump presidency is that, at least in my read, he has pushed limits just to see. So we asked for his tax returns as the country. We didn't get them. He was supposed to set up some blind trusts, with his corporations. That didn't happen either. And it does feel like a lot of these executive orders are just pushing the limits to see what can he do. And my fear is this is one of the first steps, and then there are other steps that are planned. And maybe that's not the case, but I do see the importance of pushing back quickly. Because I'm not sure what comes next, or what we will just begin to accept.
In regard to pushing borders or kind of boundaries, a very wise person on Twitter, that's where all the wisdom comes from these days, right, did say the media would be wise to think about this executive order in this way. You have an immigration ban, a travel ban. You also include green card holders. A couple days later, you say, okay, well, we're taking off the ban on green card holders. And the media may say, Trump softens, you know, and that may all be kind of a ruse. You ask your parents for $25 when you need 10.
Yeah.
You know, I think it is wise to try to understand some of to Mike's point, that there may be an active effort to push some of the boundaries. Mustafa, anything you want to say to Sam before we go back to her and see if she has changed her mind at all? What do you think about the concern that people coming from Iraq or Yemen or other places may feel that this country might not be able to securely understand who's coming in, that this 90 days or 120 days or whatever it is a wise thing to do, and that we're overreacting?
Evan, it's not about, you know, to bend those people. Is we became American citizen and we loyal to the country, but we have people is back home and we need connection with them. Now, how we are feeling about is that we are separated from our own people. The people is there, you know, choose their hope, and they sold everything to come to the country. I know it's still in the process and it's still, you know, fighting for freedoms. But the people who is here, American citizen, and they believe strongly deep inside of their heart, this is our land and we are stand, we fight for this country. We sacrifice with a lot of things. We put ourselves in the front of line, you know, to fight for this country. Now, I'm afraid to go back home. People think is, you are American citizens, bend us from to come, you know, to see you. We feel as like there is separation between us and our own people.
Well, Sam did not stay with us, but Sam, I appreciate the phone call, and you know, I think it's helpful to have this kind of dialogue. Reading today that Trump is saying he will keep President Obama's executive order to protect LGBTQ workers. So, I mean, it's certainly something to keep an eye on going forward, but at least the very latest I have, and it could be wrong, trying to stay up to date, is that there isn't an announcement otherwise. I don't know if you guys heard otherwise. No? Okay. So that's something to keep an eye on. Let's grab a couple more phone calls before the hour's up. Sam in Rochester. Go ahead, Sam.
You asked the question, you know, what kind of country does the safety are? And yes, it does make a statement, the thing that he has done thus far, as to what kind of country we are and what kind of country we're going to be for the next 4 years. This is what America is going to look like, and it could get worse than this. And you can't expect America to look any better with the people that support him, that put him in the White House. You got to think, and look who he has on his staff. He has the guy that used to write for Breitbart, Banyan, on his Look at the people that surround him. And I'd like to say the thing that he has done is he has put Americans outside the United States' life in jeopardy. And he has put the people in the United States' life in jeopardy. And he has increased the recruiting of ISIS, people that wouldn't have even thought about ISIS. But since he made these executive orders, cut these people off from their families, their relatives, and their friends, ISIS recruiting is going to go up to the point that it would have never excelled to the things that he is doing, and he is misinformed on the things that he is doing. He's making decisions without even thinking the decisions through.
Now, Sam, I got to jump in just because we're going to run out of time, and your connection's a little faded there. But Sam's concern is that this is all good propaganda for those who would seek to do us harm.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly because, you know, the racism and bigotry in this country is to be a shameful disease. And it has been allowed for the past year to grow exponentially. I think this is, ISIS doesn't have to be making any more propaganda videos because our president, unfortunately, is just doing it for them. We are less safe as a nation by doing these things, and we really need to make sure that we're listening to our experts who are really, really warning against this.
Mike, you're nodding. You agree.
Well, I would just, in a humorous but not so humorous way, The Onion had an article yesterday that kind of radical terrorists are just going to sit back on their couches and let us just keep doing what we're doing. But the reason why I think this is also really significant is it reinforces this whole idea of racism, of who is American. You know, so sitting next to me is Mustafa, who is a citizen who has fought for this country, who has made many sacrifices, father, soccer coach, in this community, and yet his status will continue to be questioned and in ways that mine won't. And so just like thinking about these much deeper concerns at both personal and institutional levels of just who is American. And that's a fundamental narrative that really has to change.
Let me just close the hour with this. John writes to the program and says, Evan, your panel is hysterical. America wants better vetting. It will all be sorted out in a reasonable time frame. That's from John. John, I don't mean to be rude here. I would wager you don't know anything about the vetting process in this country. Now, you've probably read an article or two. And I don't know, but we've talked about the Dunning-Kruger effect on the show. Your email just feels like a classic Dunning-Kruger, that maybe you read half an article. I'm not saying that vetting is perfect in this country. I'm saying it gets tiresome having conversations with people about what should we do to protect our country when they don't really know. I don't know exactly the full vetting process, but I'm here to listen, and what I'm finding out about... What are the actual attacks coming from? What is the danger? What have refugees ever done? And here we are, hearing from people who just want to lecture us about the vetting process without actually knowing the mechanisms. We should warn against that. I want to thank our panel for being here, and let's keep the conversation going. Iman, Alma, thank you so much for being here. Mike, appreciate it. Mustafa, good luck to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Short break, more connections.